Listen to every MLB game live.
In the deep left center field, it is high, it is far, it is gone.
Stream minor league affiliates.
The Midwest League home run leader.
And watch the best baseball highlights and look-ins on MLB Big Inning. MLB At-Bat is your all-in-one live baseball subscription for only $3.99 per month.
Deep left field, it's gonna go! Alvarez ties the game!
Subscribe to At-Bat within the MLB app today. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Sox Machine.
Jim Margulis, co-host of the Sox Machine podcast.
The big picture is that there is finally a direction for this team that is more than patching up spots in the roster, more than being defense first, more than getting through 2024.
The internet's longest running White Sox podcast.
If Kopech is struggling to get through four innings and walking a batter per inning, like, that holds no appeal to anybody. Whereas if he's somebody who can strike out, you know, 15 batters per nine in a relief role, that suddenly has value. Maybe not so much to the White Sox.
Managing editor of SoxMachine.com.
Where is this next core? Where are these waves of sustainable talent the White Sox thought they were building?
Jim Margulis with Bernstein and Holmes on 670 The Score.
We want Machine. Sox Machine.
You're damn right we want Machine. We want Sox Machine. Jim Margulis joins us now on the Circus Sports Illinois hotline. Download the Circus Sports app. A week ago today, we were at Stadium Swim at Circa having a great time.
Now we're not there anymore.
That's all right, but the sun is out in the city. Beautiful, so.
It's still cold. It's too cold for me to sit at a game yet.
I almost wore my I'm cold, obvious shirt, sweatshirt today. But
I need that shirt because that is my way of life.
Yeah. I mean, I'll give you mine if you want.
No, I don't steal other people's hoodies.
God bless you for that, because that is an epidemic.
I know.
You know, I had an ex in college that made off with one of my hoodies. It was my, like,
we
my softest
do.
One. Yeah.
That's
I'm
the
still
point.
Bitter about it.
As
one
you
of my,
should
14
be.
Years.
One of my exes gave me his hoodie, and I was like, you deserve having this back after we broke up. I'm like, it was always better on you anyway. And he's like, nah. I'm like, all right, but I'm not taking other people's hoodies. Nope, I'm going to have my own.
Ray, did you ever have a hoodie stolen by an
ex? I'm thinking about Stud saying that he's holding this 14-year grudge over a hoodie. I know I've had plenty of clothes stolen away, and I don't think twice about it.
Because you're
was
like,
a good,
hey.
It was a good hoodie.
Thanks for stealing
the
my
The stolen
clothes.
Hoodie thing is a thing.
That means that they are there.
There's
They're
a lot of like
not
good
on my person.
TikToks and reels about that very thing about stolen hoodies.
Oh,
it was
yeah,
a
there's
polar
warnings.
Plunge hoodie. It was great.
My friend Marshall Harris, who you know well, will warn people about stolen hoodie season. Brandon Pope is also a raising awareness stolen hoodie season person.
It's very important to not have your hoodie stolen. Jim Margulis covers the White Sox and runs SoxMachine.com. He's nice enough to join us now. You ever had a hoodie stolen by a beloved, Jim?
I was thinking about it. No, I've had hoodies where people have liked them and like I've given the shirt off my back and said, hey, if you like it so much, get it. I can replace it. And turns out like, oh, they don't make that anymore. So I did not look ahead and took a gamble that a product would still be available and it's not. So I've had my heart broken by my own lack of foresight, I think.
Oh, man, there's a Bulls hoodie. Do you remember the light blue one they did with the red Chicago White Sox script? Man, that hoodie. I wish that I could have gotten my hands on that hoodie.
Yeah, the one that's based on the flag.
It's so good.
I wish the Bulls would do, I mean, they do a great job with their uniforms anyway, but I wish they would do more with the flag-inspired stuff because you could never go wrong with that.
Also,
ever.
The White Sox script Chicago font, not even the old school Bulls one, but the White Sox one specifically is like one of my favorite fonts.
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with it. I want them to bring back the script C, but, you know, I believe I'm the only one that wants them to bring back the script C.
Wait.
The current script or the 60s? I like the 60s script.
No,
for the
like,
White Sox,
like the late 80s, early 90s C.
Okay.
I want that back. The red, white, and blue, like script C. I always like that.
Do you have one, Jim, that you really like?
Yeah, I like I'm partial to the 60s, the powder blue one that has the kind of like powder blue backdrop. I think it was the road jerseys then with the white Chicago script across it. And then White Sox is in capital letters, like underneath the underline of Chicago. That's probably my favorite of the scripts. I grew up like that's the first jersey I remember or the first jersey/hat I remember having as a kid was the late 80s one. And I always thought it was an E. So that's why I'm not attached to it, because I looked at it like, oh, that's clearly letter E, as I'm getting a basic understanding of cursive, and I was mistaken.
Well, you know what? Logos that don't get the whole point across easily are not good logos. So I feel like you might be right there.
This is a truism. Tim Anderson is back in town, Jim, and we just played a couple minutes of him talking about his time, especially the last couple of years in a White Sox uniform. How do you view how his career as a White Sox ended?
I think it's it's emblematic of a lot of the ways the White Sox rose and fell, like just with him being a very unique talent that maybe you wouldn't advise to everybody. Like the way he got on base was like hitting like mad and not taking pitches. And it worked for him. But like when it comes to the White Sox, they're over aggressive to a fault, and not everybody is as good as going outside the strike zone as he is. So like you couldn't make the entire plane out of him. He had injury problems. The White Sox had injury problems. He had just inefficiencies on both sides of the ball. Like he couldn't steal bases like halfway in the season because his legs started acting up, and then his range kind of shrunk on him in the field. So like you never could count on him being the same player throughout the whole year just based on his body failing him. And we're seeing that with like Yoan Moncada and Eloy Jimenez and Luis Robert and such. So when he was fun, he was really fun, just like the White Sox were really fun. But that kind of ended sooner than everybody thought. So here we are. But yeah, it's, I think you can say that about a lot of players, though, just with so many physical flaws of not being able to stay healthy. Like when Yoan Moncada is good, he's fun, but he's not healthy. Luis Robert, same thing. So it's not a uniquely Anderson problem, but he was there the longest. So I think it gets tied into him being maybe the poster boy for just the White Sox fortunes overall.
I will say that when he was successful, and he put together a long enough streak of being successful, he was elite. You're talking about the batting title. You're talking about what he did to be considered an MVP, at least discussionable candidate. I mean, him and Abreu, those 2 years, 3 years, that was not lost on me what they were able to do. I remember when I think it was April of 2019, when he was batting 400, and I said to myself, there's no way this is sustainable. But then you saw it happen. He moved toward that in a way that caused him to be one of the best batters in the American League that year.
Yeah, and it was a growing process for him, and White Sox fans could grow along with him. At times it seemed like, why are they giving him so many at-bats? Or is this another Gordon Beckham case to where like he's a decent middle infielder for pre-ARB and early ARB prices, but eventually he'll run his course. But just through work ethic and trial and error and having a very long runway to get good, he got good, which I think is the kind of reward you seldom see. Like a lot of times it feels like watching baseball players, like 1,000 at bats, you think like, oh, I have the idea of this guy. And oftentimes there are exceptions where they break the mold like Anderson did, but then those exceptions lead to false hope elsewhere. So I think, you know, when you watch a guy like Anderson finally have that breakthrough and, conquer all those struggles and show why it's worth it, I think you really have to savor those stories, because you'll for every Anderson you have, you'll have 10 guys who show glimpses but aren't quite able to close that hole in their game to where they're, maybe a bench bat, or they're an up and down guy, but they're not a fixture the way that Anderson was.
Baseball is back, and so is MLB.tv. Watch every out-of-market, regular season game on your favorite streaming devices. Anywhere, anytime, all season long. Follow the action live or on demand. Track four games at once with multi-view mode. And catch up with in-game highlights. Plus, original programs, minor league broadcasts, and local pre- and post-game shows. Go to MLB.tv to start your free trial today. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
I would agree with that. I also saw a quote from him yesterday that stuck out when he discussed how, quote, it's hard to win when you don't have the right guys to go out and compete and that want to win it. That spoke of the dysfunction we saw. We all knew what we were watching. It was telegraphed. But for him to say that, what comes to mind to you?
Well, Abreu said something similar when he was with Houston and reflecting on his time with the White Sox and whether there were any hard feelings with you know, the contract the White Sox did or didn't offer him. And he said something like, you know, I don't have the quote in front of me, but something along the lines of some of the guys want to win, or I'm pulling for some of the players that showed the same desire that I had. So it was phrased in a way to where like, oh, so who isn't in that group? And I think Anderson's saying the same thing. So you do have like multiple sources now from players among peers and colleagues calling them out versus like any kind of, you know, ex post facto, you know, analysis from like, say, the front office saying that they didn't have the desire when, you know, they should have been the ones kind of assessing the mix of the players. Actually seeing players criticizing players as well, which I think carries more weight because it's easy, I think, for the front office to pivot and say, you know, they didn't have what it takes, because then they weren't wrong about the talent. They were wrong about the desire, but it was the players failing for not putting the talent on the field they have. But when players are doing it, and I think players are probably, in most cases, the least willing to throw other players under the bus for effort things, because they know firsthand what it's like to gut through periods of times where they're playing with less than their best and just trying to get by and figure out something that works in order to deal with a nagging injury. So I think you wouldn't see somebody like Anderson, who had his own nagging injuries and having to play through a bunch of stuff, call out players for a lack of desire if he didn't think there was something fundamentally wrong.
James Fegan wrote for SoxMachine.com about the really good start that Garrett Crochet is on. What did you find interesting about that piece?
Well, he's got a voice. I think that's what jumped out to me with Crochet, is like when you read his paragraphs, you can hear the way he's saying it. It's not robotic. It's thoughtful. And it's, you know, he's giving consideration in his answers and his process and opening up. And on our podcast last night, James is talking about how the Crochet who was trying to figure out a relief role, trying to get through high leverage innings without the 100-mile-per-hour stuff he came into the league with, and having these very high profile pass fail tests in front of him. Now that he's in the rotation, he's had Tommy John surgery, he's had like reasons to mature just within the game, also had reasons to feel more comfortable in his skin because he's maybe doing the thing he wanted to do all along. He's being a lot more candid and open with just how he's going about his business. And, you know, somebody like James is great at mining that information and asking follow-up questions because he has his own interest in it. And you get to really curious corners of a pitcher's delivery, the thought process underneath how he's going about mixing pitches. And so it's fun when that curiosity is paired with a player like Crochet, who's like, yeah, I'll talk about it. There's no magic or any kind of secret sauce that I can't divulge. Like I'm working out as well, and I'm curious about what other pitchers are doing. So he's sharing it because like he enjoys when other players share it with him and their processes. And it's enlightening, especially like when you have so little as a White Sox fan to like hang hopes on, that having a guy like Crochet, who's one, successful, and two, seeming like he's having fun with the success and wanting to do even more with it. That's one of the few areas I think that, as long as he's healthy, knock on wood, that should be a reliable source of enlightenment for White Sox fans.
What do you think about his delivery? Because we've seen a very typical Ethan Katz delivery, more so out of right-handers. But to me, his is different. It works and it's cool compared to all the other ones we've seen lately.
Yeah, he has the high leg kick, and you know, he does a couple things that I think were very relief or reliever profile oriented, with like, oh, you can't repeat that for five or six innings at a time, or you know, he's not going to be able to find the release point in the slider. So he's really going to have to be somebody who throws 25 pitches an inning to succeed. And so reliever, bullpen, easy does it. And, you know, it's understandable when he comes in the league without a full college year of proof of concept starting. And then, you know, the pandemic happens. And I think, you know, there's a lot of uncertainty with player development all around, to where like, just it's the easiest route for him to be a productive major leaguer is the bullpen. But yeah, I think when you have the White Sox rebuild crumbling and a whole lot of games that are meaningless, quote unquote, for like a big picture of contending, it is an opportunity to say like, Crochet really wants to start. He's doing everything in his power to develop his body and his arsenal for starting. If he wants to do it, let them try. Let them do some on-the-job training, because there aren't, you know, especially at starting, you have five players you need to fill out that spot. So surely Crochet is better than one of those five options to take the ball every fifth or sixth day and see what he does with it. And in Crochet's case, like, it is a, he has some natural physical gifts. He talks about just being so hulking on the mound and just getting his release point closer to the plate than most pitchers, just because he's that tall and his limbs are that long, that his delivery naturally works in his favor to where, like, throwing a leg kick and, you know, he's automatically more than hitters are used to handling. So, you know, if his body is able to hold up for 75 plus pitches every 5 days, sure, you know, reward that conviction, use the, you know, explore the studio space, to understand just what you might have. And so far, like, you know, when you can have all those at bats or all those innings to cover and one guy you weren't counting on having those plate appearances or innings covered, does it in above average fashion, that's found money in a certain respect. And the White Sox need as much as possible to, like, not spend as much time in last place as it seems like they're going to.
Yeah, that leg is like a fulcrum. Like, it's a good balance for the rest of the upper body mechanism. Like, it works out well for him. I also want to shout out Eric Fetty, mostly because I liked that signing when it happened. Mm-hmm. But it was nice to see him get the win the other day, and also a shot in the arm for people. I know that that's just three wins there for the entire team, but I feel like there might be something that they've hit on there with him.
Yeah, Fetty, like, partially I'm partial to KBO signings just because I've been to a KBO game and it's so much fun. The baseball is fun when you walk around South Korea. Like, any player who signs with a major league team after reaching a certain level of stardom in the KBO is followed intensely, whether, especially if it's a Korean national, but, like, even if it's a player who used the KBO to improve and speaks fondly of his time in the league, like, there's a lot of goodwill towards that player. And you see a lot of merchandise, a lot of jerseys, et cetera, with that player because, like, they're proud of him. So I've always wanted the White Sox to explore that market because it's just fun internationally to see the kind of just cultures of baseball collide and seeing that the brand and awareness expand. So there's that. But also, like, he did use the KBO to become a different pitcher and to work on his arsenal. It wasn't working in the States, and it was a proving ground for him, kind of like, you know, Crochet is using this as a proving ground. Like, the KBO, a little less talent there, a little less, like, home run threat, with every at bat, to where, like, you can make more mistakes and you can use pitches you didn't use before and improve them. And he went from being kind of like a sinker slider to having sinker, sweeper, split change that he works on. So he has three different pitches to go through a lineup two times. Right now, it seems like the third time through is a little bit of a challenge, but the first innings, I think, are easy enough to where he goes a pretty reliable five so far. And, you know, it's worth giving him those opportunities to improve as well, because it's kind of like the KBO all over again in a way, to where, like, he has to find out how his stuff works against the best hitters in the world, and he should be allowed to fail. He's older than a typical prospect, but he gets that same leeway just the same because he's proved a certain amount of talent already.
I want to ask you about Andrew Vaughn for a second. I feel like in watching him, this is just the eye test, that at first base, he's gotten pretty good. I don't understand why he's struggling at the plate. I was hoping you could shed some light on it. Because, look, I was never high on Vaughn. But I thought that he would be at least a good hitter. Why has he turned into a bad hitter?
That's a question everybody's grappling with. And I guess I can introduce my leading theory, which, you know, is when you look back at the scouting reports and just see how universal the acclaim for Vaughn was, like, it feels like a lot of people are grappling with the same question. Like, why didn't it work? Why does he not draw walks anymore? Why does he not hit for the power we thought? And when it comes to, like, the White Sox, because I think there are more hitters than Vaughn that this applies to, but the White Sox really prioritized all fields power. Like, you know, Roberts, Jimenez, Vaughn's another one where we don't want him to necessarily sell out for lifting and pulling the ball in the air. We want to be able to hit the ball out to all fields. And it makes a certain amount of sense for guaranteed right field because the ball can carry out to right. Like you see a lot of cheap lefty homers that way. The White Sox don't have the kind of lefty hitters to take advantage of that. So maybe it makes sense to have some right-handed hitters who can do the same. But I think with Vaughn, whether it's a case of like, you know, because he's on the shorter side versus somebody like Jimenez, I wonder like if it's a case where if they're throwing him away, 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 and he's seeing a lot of sliders away, 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 and he's got to go to right field, being on the shorter side, does he have the natural leverage to hit the ball out to right with authority on a regular basis to where he can, you know, maybe sneak 5 or 6 homers over the right field wall over the course of the season to kind of pad his numbers, or, you know, tuck in doubles in the right field corner because just putting the barrel on it, even without like the full force of your swing, is enough to get extra bases that way. Like, I wonder if it's a matter of just him not ever establishing the outside corner enough to know like which fringe pitches to chase or which fringe pitches to lay off of, or if it's a matter of like he's making decent enough swing decisions, he just doesn't have like necessarily the levers to create the kind of force he needs to hit the ball with authority that way. So the all fields power he showed at Cal isn't translating to the way that the White Sox thought in the upper levels. But again, like when you look at the way he was developed and, you know, how he didn't face AA pitching or AAA pitching, like, is this something that would have been known earlier on and the White Sox might have been able to adjust faster or trade him faster if they didn't trust it? But because he's been learning on the fly and so much has been thrown in his plate, it's taken years to understand like what his natural limitations are versus throwing him in the deep end and just saying like, oh, you know, it's understandable he's thrashing. So that's, I think, a question maybe the White Sox could have answered sooner had they had the typical runway of AA and AAA, even if he didn't spend all that long there.
Jim, as always, we appreciate your time. Thank you so much, sir.
Thanks for having like positive questions to talk about. It was a nice, refreshing change of pace.
What yes. a difference one win can make.
Well, we had to spend 5 minutes on hoodies, though, to get you there. So it's good. Have a great weekend.
You too. Thank you.
That is Jim Margulis of Sox Machine.
Listen to every MLB game live.
In the deep left center field, it is high, it is far, it is gone.
Stream minor league affiliates.
The Midwest League home run leader.
And watch the best baseball highlights and look-ins on MLB Big Inning. MLB At Bat is your all-in-one live baseball subscription for only $3.99 per month.
Deep left field, it's gonna go! Alvarez ties the game!
Subscribe to At Bat within the MLB app today. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.